Thank you, Dr. Wilson. At this time, I will go ahead and bring up Jonathan Kish, but before I do, I'll introduce him. And I also like to mention, I didn't mention this at the beginning, we're going to save all questions until the end, so I just wanted to make that note. Jonathan Kish is a PhD candidate at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine in the Department of Epidemiology and Public Health. His research focuses on understanding and alleviating cervical and colorectal cancer disparities in immigrant and ethnic minority populations in Miami. He and his mentor, Dr. Aaron Kobetz, utilize a CBPR approach to develop sustainable community interventions in marginalized populations. And today he will discuss association between high-risk HPV infection and feminine hygiene practices among rural Haitians.
Morning, everyone. So today I'd like to talk about two things primarily. The distribution of HPV infection amongst a population in Haiti and the feminine hygiene practices that we feel are associated potentially with the increased risk of HPV infection within this community. I'll start with, I have no relationships to disclose. Today we'll talk about cervical cancer in Haiti, why it's a problem, the feminine hygiene practices themselves and how we came to learn about them and what the potential mechanisms for disease might be. I'll talk about a little bit about our cervical self-sampling intervention that we piloted in the Haitian immigrant population in Miami and then adopted for use in Haiti. We'll then discuss the HPV infection, the prevalence, and associated risk factors. And then what does this actually mean for prevention in the future going forward in both Miami and in Haiti? So cervical cancer in Haiti is a humongous problem. If you think about some of the incidence rates that were just referenced in the previous discussion, the estimated incidence rate in Haiti is through the roof. It's one of the highest in the Western Hemisphere. These are some old numbers, but they haven't changed much recently. It's most likely attributable to the fact that there's no access to pap smear screening within the population. I'll state right now that in our sample, we only found that 7% of women had ever had a pap test in their entire life in our population. There's little knowledge on the distribution of high-risk HPV infection, the necessary cause of cervical cancer. And through our work in Little Haiti, we found, through qualitative work there in our CBPR approach, that feminine hygiene practices may impact infection risk and change by modifying the clearance patterns within the cervical cells. So this research had the primary objective was to demonstrate the acceptability and efficacy of a cervical self-sampling intervention in a rural population in Haiti. And the secondary objective was to evaluate the association between high-risk HPV infection and some of the feminine hygiene practices of the population. This is just wanted to show you where our study site was. Port-au-Prince is right here, obviously. And Tamonde is a commune roughly 2 hours northeast of the city. It's a population of roughly 40,000 individuals. It's extremely rural. It's located in the Central Plateau. There's subsistence farming, low education, and it's very, very hard to access, and there's only one health clinic located right here on the southern edge where women from the surrounding areas are able to gain gynecological care and other health care needs. To alleviate all the health care problems that might be facing women in this community, we partnered with Partners in Health, who operates the clinic, and has a network of community health workers who work in the commune itself. There's roughly 10 of them, and they have set areas where they go provide all the necessary care that women might need, and they have specific routes that they walk and to get to the women. So they have a set area that they go through. So we adopted our cervical self-sampling intervention to go along with their traditional mechanisms of providing care to these women. So we started this project in Miami, Florida. In Miami, there's a large one of the largest immigrant populations of Haitian women in the country, approximately 250 to 500,000, depending on when you look at it. And actually, I'll be talking about this in another session, the cancer epidemiology session, about the actual distribution of HPV prevalence in that population. So this research came from that. Based off of our work, we found that there was a higher incidence of cervical cancer in the Miami population, roughly four times that of the surrounding area. So to address this disparity, we went into the community and started asking them about what did they think. Is cervical cancer a problem? Do they know about cervical cancer? And much like the previous presenter discussed, there was limited knowledge. There was low prevalence of Pap smear screening. And that was related to a variety of access barriers, such as education, income, immigration status, non-Western health belief views. You know, cancer is a fatalistic disease. It's sent to you. It's put on you. There's nothing you can do to prevent it. So through our qualitative research in that community and some quantitative research, we came to find that there is a high preponderance of feminine hygiene practices that are done very frequently within the community using compounds and products that are different. They use a variety of different natural herbs, some chemical cleansers, very frequently. Over two times per day is what was reported to us. These practices are based a lot on that belief of bodily balance, that any kind of fluid discharge is associated with negative health. And so women traditionally then will use these products as drying and tightening agents to fix those problems themselves, and also for it's desirable for male partners. So there are plant-based and commercially based products that are available that are used externally, internally for these practices. In similar research in other ethnic communities, in different populations across the globe, we see that these practices are at times associated with a variety of different kinds of vaginal infections, sexually transmitted infections, and other diseases. So combining that knowledge with the research that I've done across the globe, we thought, well, hey, maybe there's something going on here. Maybe it's not just Pap smear. Maybe there's another factor that could be involved, and that would be something that we'd need to address specifically in this community. So the intervention itself is a cervical self-sampling intervention. It is basically a tampon-like device that is inserted up to the cervix. A brush is ejected from the top of that. It scrapes the cervical cells. It's then retracted back into the sampler. And then that is taken back to the lab and tested for high-risk HPV infection and cytology. So in Miami, we did a similar thing where we went out into the community with a community health worker who had this flip chart here. This is the Haitian version for Haiti. And so it's pictorial, it's written in Creole. Most women didn't read, and so it was done in that fashion. So the community health workers in Haiti would go throughout their respected routes to each house and recruit women over the age of 18 who wanted to participate in the study. They had to have no history of cervical cancer, premenopausal, and had not had a Pap test in the past 3 years. So using these visual aids, the CHW has delivered this tutorial and administered a brief questionnaire on some HPV's risk factors, demographics, and acceptability of the self-sampling intervention itself. Women were then given their results upon a subsequent visit by the community health worker, and they were referred to necessary follow-up within the clinic that was located on the southern edge of the town for treatment for any kind of, if they were HPV positive, they were referred for treatment via VIA or colposcopy. And samples were actually analyzed at the University of Miami for high-risk HPV detection. So we're talking about feminine hygiene, but we can't talk about that without discussing what the findings were for the HPV results. In our population, we had a total of 464 participants. Of those 464, 38 of them submitted samples that were not viable for HPV testing. So that speaks a little bit more to the acceptability and the efficacy of the intervention itself. So it was only 8%, which is a good start. Within the remaining 424 women, 12.7% of them tested positive for high-risk strains of HPV. We use this, the HPV invader assay, which detects the species A5, A6, A7, or A9. And within those different species are the types that you might be familiar with, 16, 18, and the variety of others. So 16 is part of A9, and 18 is part of A7. And those are the ones that are protected using Gardasil and those types of vaccines. The majority of the infections were A9, over 56% of them were. And there was a high proportion, 10 infections, 18% that were 18.6% that were high-risk co-infections, which is higher than the estimates in other populations. You can see here that we did a basic logistic regression. Crude's odds ratios are reported for HPV infection and associated risk factors. The only risk factor that appeared statistically significant was being infected with HIV or AIDS at the time as well. There were some trends in the number of full-term pregnancies and age at first pregnancy, but nothing that was significant. So now let's talk about the feminine hygiene practices a little bit. So we gained a list of the potential products that were used, and they're kind of hard to read there, but we basically broke them down into there were 12 different ones that were reported in Miami and through our talks with Haitian women. Soap, water with lime, aluminum salt, alum, Condi's crystals, which is potassium permanganate, Borosol, other washes, which would include Hydrosol, Lemisol, and Auginol. Hydrosol is a boric acid-based compound. Then there were some of the natural products, yellow balsam, castor oil from the Palma Christi plant, pigeon pea from Pois Congo, which is the Creole word for it, chamomile oil, and balsam pear. The majority of women used soap and water, basically, for their daily hygiene. But there was a large proportion of them that used a variety of other products. The highest prevalence, or the highest proportion of those, was Condi's crystals, castor oil, and pigeon pea, Pois Congo. It's an interesting pattern. We haven't really made sense of what the temporality of these, when they're used and how they're used specifically. Is it before, after giving birth? Is it after your period? Is it before sex? And so that's something that needs to be teased out into the future that I'll talk about in a little bit. But you can see that there was a lot of users of these products in general. Only 12 women said that they never used any of these products at all. So this is just our other logistic regression, looking at toilet practices and high-risk HPV infection. And I don't think I mentioned this, I apologize. Toilette de bas is the Creole word for intimate cleansing, feminine hygiene. So that's why I have that there. So 97% of the women practiced toilette de bas. All of them basically did it two times or more per day, all of them did it daily. There was no real differences in those who did it internally or externally, and there was no differences in the length of exposure if you did it since childhood, since puberty or adolescence, or since becoming sexually active or getting married. So the interesting part was that we found that women who used the pigeon pea Pois Congo leaves had a higher risk of high-risk HPV infection compared to non-users. Other users. So these were adjusted for every other product on the table. That was the only one that was significant. There was a trend in terms of the number of total products reported used by women, and that increased the risk of high-risk HPV infection. But again, we couldn't really untangle, based off of our questionnaire data, what might have exactly been going on there. I'll try to summarize some of the things here. I know it's a lot. This was the first attempt that we had seen, although yesterday there was a talk on a northern commune in Haiti where a woman was doing screening and treatment for HPV and cervical dysplasia. But this was the first attempt to establish the high-risk prevalence within our community. That prevalence is wrong. Sorry, it's supposed to be 12.7% like I had previously referenced. And that's consistent. It's in the middle of the range with majority of cross-sectional estimates of HPV infection. The majority of our infections were types 16, or were of the species that represent types 16 and 18, and we had a higher proportion of women who were infected with multiple strains of HPV. Over 98% of the women reported practicing toilette daily, and 64.3% reporting doing so since childhood or menarche. There was a significant, as I said, variation in the type of product used, and most women used products both internally and externally. And the pigeon pea leaves were associated with a 3 times risk of high-risk infection. There was the trend in the increasing number of products. Also, interestingly, using water itself was a risk factor. It wasn't significant, but it was an increased risk with that. So that might just be a fact that you're mixing these products with water in general, and there might be some kind of misclassification of exposure with women reporting. They're answering the questions, but they're not really understanding what we're asking them, or we're not asking them the right way based on the community context and the level of knowledge and education. Limitations. Obviously, this was a convenient sample of sorts. We didn't randomly select homes. We tried to reach everyone we could. The goal of the intervention was to screen and to try to bring the intervention to as many women as possible in an area where there is limited access to this type of care. So our estimates that way would be, you know, subject to certain kinds of types of bias, and so it's a good start, though. The biggest problem in terms of assessing the importance or the association between these practices and high-risk HPV infection would be this issue of misclassification of exposure. We were limited by several factors. The primary one was we were adding this intervention onto an existing community health worker program, and so they were concerned with the burden of asking a lot of questions of these women, being able to deliver the care that was, they thought more pressing and more important at the time. Their traditional things, such as, you know, prenatal care, dealing with HIV infections, any other type of thing that they're tasked with on a daily basis. And so we weren't able to accurately identify when women use these products, and we were only really asking them, had you ever used these products? So that's the big caveat to all of this. In our current work in Miami, we have now tried to go beyond this and get a more detailed exposure history of when you use these products and how you use them in a larger representative sample of approximately 500 women. So that's currently ongoing. There could be other unmeasured risk factors that might impact the physiological responses and this distribution of infection that we weren't able to assess in the population, again, due to just this was our first time going out into the field in Haiti and trying to figure out what we could ask, how we could ask it, and whether the intervention itself of actually getting women tested and then getting them treated would work. We were unable to look at sexual and sexual history, number of partners in total. We've had problems within the Haitian population of women not reporting accurately those estimates, and this was also shown in the research that was presented yesterday, that they couldn't get an accurate estimate of the number of partners a woman would have in their lifetime, which is obviously one of the greatest risk factors for HPV infection. So some next steps that we're working on right now. There's ongoing laboratory research to actually elucidate the specific mechanism of biological responses when cervical cells are exposed to these compounds in the lab. And so that is currently ongoing to add the biological plausibility to the associations that we've potentially seen. We're looking to expand the intervention itself into another commune or a different type of semi-urban area, peri-urban area in Haiti, and trying to do it more in a group-based setting to see if that will work better than having the individual home visits. It all depends on the context of where we're working. This was the only way that we could get this done in that area based on just the rural nature of the population. And then the ultimate goal for us is to morph this into a packaged and delivered intervention that has screen, treat, and vaccinate all combined into one. We see that as being the only way that we can make this into a sustainable intervention in the community. And so we're currently identifying mechanisms to add in the vaccine component to it and to get treatment available as it's needed. So that is all I have, and I'd like to thank This was funded by the University of the Sylvester Cancer Center and was obviously taken on by Partners in Health, and they helped us tremendously in dealing with all of the infrastructure and being the troops on the ground, especially all the community health workers, without whom this is impossible to do. So thank you very much.